Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Neil and Kristen Baker's Psychic Hour. Well, we had a caller who dropped as soon as we started the show, which is weird, because they had to hear the they is the wrong word. That person. You know how much that word is misused. They.
What?
When
that person.
Well, no, when people are speaking, including both of us, you know, saying they is not correct. That's not singular.
No.
So that person, not they, wasn't like a group of people
no,
calling.
No, collective. But it's, they is
yeah.
collective.
Right. So
you have to say
yeah,
that person.
That person. But I mean, it's so misused.
Yeah, they weren't there. Yeah.
They weren't there when
it could it. You know, what it amounts to is a lazy tongue. So a lazy tongue just wants to collect everything in one word. So we're accustomed to being lazy, especially
well,
with language.
But yeah, it's true. However,
we've lost the art of language. I mean,
yeah, the formality in language has decreased greatly over the years.
We don't think the way we would formally write. Buckley, William Buckley is his name. He was over articulate. He was ridiculed for using grandiose language, elaborate words that people had to rush to the dictionary. Commentator, analyst, somewhat of a conservative.
Yeah.
But William Buckley, and he had his own show. And he was kind of an interesting guy, and he was very engaging, very intelligent, but never a misplaced word, complicated words.
Well, I mean,
and his words were like an aerial act, they were in some respects. But, you know, no, we've lost the art of conversation.
And texts also have degraded the way we communicate in written form, unfortunately. You know, when I'm texting, I won't put a period, you know, punctuation. I sometimes don't use apostrophes in place because you're, you know, typing with your thumb so quickly that it's, you know, having to press the shift button is one extra step to get to the punctuation mark. So when I'm writing, I'm pretty meticulous about my writing, like doing formal writing, doing a letter, doing our book, that kind of thing.
It's a shame.
Anal,
but it's also
this can make you more sloppy. If you speak sloppily, then it can bleed into other areas, sadly.
And there's coded words and they corrupted the language. I mean, everything's coded or
they have corrupted the language, but that's used right. No, it was that person. No, I think it was that person who hung up that corrupted the language.
Yeah.
It was that person.
I hate
that one person.
You know, FYI.
Oh.
I didn't know what it was. I thought it was a...
FYI is not a new...
For your information.
FYI is not a... Yeah, it's for your information, but that's an old...
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's old.
LOL.
That's more modern.
But then just
FYI has been around for decades.
Oh, really?
I think. Yeah.
Well, news to me. I don't know. But there's coded words that mean, you know, codes words that are scrambled letters that mean something to these people who text. I don't know what, but the language itself in the art of conversation, we've lost it. And it was at one time when we spoke, how we wrote is how we spoke. But now, when I was a kid, the most corrupt word, you're writing a paper. In 1812, you wouldn't write that.
No, but they're called fillers.
You know, and you know what I'm saying?
I used that on the air last show. I was thinking about, I can't believe you mentioned that because I was actually thinking about that last night as I was trying to fall asleep unsuccessfully trying to fall asleep.
Yeah.
See, I just rearranged the sentence incorrect.
I was taught a simile is a connective language. Roses are like beauty, something like that. But like is everywhere. It's another filler word, but it's corrupted our language.
Yeah, and another one that's kind of mind-boggling is you guys. First of all, you guys refers to, I mean, you would think a group of men, but it's applied to women.
Yeah, you guys.
Can you imagine if you called a group of men, hey, gal?
You know,
I mean, it's like.
That term actually goes back in time to Abbott and Costello. And Costello used to use it a lot. And then it was adapted into the Sesame Street show. Hey, you guys.
No, that's not Sesame Street. No, Electric Company.
Oh, Electric Company. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey,
you
get
guys. Please.
But, hey, well.
Yeah,
it
was
sure.
Electric Company.
But, you know, guys and dolls, now there's a separation for the musical guys.
I used to play that song for the birds outside. You remember
the
Electric Company song? And they start flying, like, madly across the yard.
Yeah, they love that and Sesame Street. And, you know, actually Sesame Street, when we talk about language, the language of puppetry, they're trained to have those puppets be expressive and to have certain, it's very scientific, to have them move in relation to different wordage and that they are kept animated. You know, you'll see they shake their heads a lot. They move around a lot. So the hand is operating like a brain. The hand is the brain of the puppet. And it's interesting because if the hand is the brain of the puppet, then the hand is the brain of the human being. But the human being has to now make gestures, movements with his hand that conveys a whole language for the puppet. When we speak, we use fillers with our hands. When I was brought up, teachers used to say, well, people who use their hands when they're speaking, those are very intelligent people. And if you look at the movement of their hands, some of them are very geometric in form, some wave around like a whirlpool, some gather things, some open up their palms like they're praying, some use their fist. The hand gesture, and there's fascinating studies on this. Yeah, the third finger statement. But the, you know what that represents? What? Yeah, erection.
Yeah, exactly. I mouthed it.
You know, and then you got to make your other two fingers
into
look like
testicles.
I don't know. I just say use the real thing. Why use your hand? You know, if you're mad at somebody, just whip it out. But anyways.
Unfortunately, if you're penisless, then that's not an option.
Yeah.
But
then,
we
have now
envy. No, well, there's puppets. Speaking of penis, actually, back to puppetry. Have you ever seen the puppetry of penis?
The puppetry of the penis?
The puppetry of the penis.
Well, I don't know. My penis is
No. Will you please?
Ventriloquism.
I think we need to, like, not
bit.
Talk about that, your anatomy, okay? Or mine. I'm not talking about my vagina or my vulva, which is actually the correct terminology for the whole enchilada, if you will. But
When I was a kid, I was writing a paper and I wrote penis, and the teacher got mad at me. And I said, no, I meant to say the pen is power. And it looked like penis power. But I meant to say the pen is power. I didn't.
You didn't separate. See, look, sloppy writing.
I said penis power. And in fact, the teacher said, you know what? I like penis power better than the penis power. She gave me an A because it was talking about the ego. But anyways.
The puppetry of the penis was a show that is a live show that they did where they contorted their genitalia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was like a touring show, and they did a documentary about it. Melbourne International Comedy Festival in Australia is where it's
I heard about that. That's the same thing. On the other side of the gender, there's the word chatterbox. And chatterbox is related to vagina. I don't know why they say chatterbox. I don't know. Chatter? I could think of better words. And then they just said, after get chatter, let's just call it the box. And then they made it the box. All these euphemisms.
Euphemisms.
Yeah.
Lazy tongue.
Like restroom, lab, you know. I used to get lavatory and laboratory. Mixed up. So when I was a kid in grammar school, the teacher said, well, today we're going to be doing some scientific studies and going to the, and doing them in the laboratory. I thought, oh, God, what are we going to do? Fecal samples there? I couldn't figure out why we'd be going
to the show is going down the toilet quick.
Yeah, well, eventually we'll be out to sea. And that was a movie, Out to Sea, with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon. Yeah, Margaret.
Sorry, do you have ADD? God.
Well, I don't know. See, that's another abbreviation. I mean, that's very.
No.
See, now you're guilty.
No, that's a. That's not.
Attention
deficit. That was a disorder.
Yeah, well.
You're jumping all over the place.
But
the acronym.
Acronym.
Al-Anon.
Let's get on with the show.
Okay. No,
so
we were talking. No, you know what? Today's September 11th, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say that we were talking about another topic last night, but you know, today is September 11th and we were talking about 11s on the last show. And last night we watched a crime documentary, which was very interesting. And the guy's birth date, we can get into that, I think, a little bit on the show. But I wanted to mention that it's September 11th, 19th anniversary of the Twin Towers being detonated.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, the plane.
Right, the man in the cave is the one who coordinated that.
Yeah.
Right. But here we are 19 years later, and we're, you know, in a very different situation. You know, that's another filler.
You know,
terrible. But.
But I think, you know, since you you know, brought it up.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Devolving.
The 9/11, I hate to call it the anniversary of it. But remembrance, there isn't a word to fit the acknowledgement of this date, because it's just a reminder of that tragic event and what happened, not only to the people in the building, but of course the people in the plane, moments before their death, fighting with those terrorists.
What?
And then... at the same time, people in the towers deciding that they were going to have to jump. Can you imagine the feeling of that? Needless to say that the people who were killed in the initial impact, but then those that knew in their last moments that they were going to have to either burn to death or jump to their death. And, gee, my God, the language of their heartbeat must have been just out of range. But again, this is, you know, a tragedy, and it forever. I don't think New York has even recovered from it. Now they're being hit with the COVID-19.
Well, that's what I was
really
trying to. Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, 19 years later, this is where we are. I mean, it's totally different landscape.
Yeah, when we get into, you know, COVID-19, 19 years later, and now we're in 2020.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, what was it? Talk for a minute, because I have to look something up.
Well.
Because I have to look something up, because I want to make sure I correctly, I.
You know, I've gone to sites where there were great tragedies. And I visited Dachau.
Yeah, that's it.
In Germany, the concentration camp.
You went to Dachau.
Dachau. And what I saw there, because I forced myself to use my third eye there. You go through a tour, and then you can kind of walk on the grounds in certain areas. And I was the whole time thinking, my God, do I just want to look at this with my physical eye and just
absorb it that way?
Absorb it, or do I dare to get to a different state of consciousness and use my third eye? Well, I did. And what I saw there were, I would describe them as residual energies. They're, you know, those people had been tortured enough. Their souls aren't there trapped. But what I saw was...
No souls are there. You saw no soul there trapped.
No, wait a minute. What I basically saw there were the, well, they're called apparitions, but ghostly residual
energies. So like the astral body?
The astral bodies, because what happens in the astral plane, in many cases, just as we leave our physical bodies behind in the physical plane, when we get into the astral plane, our souls would discard
the astral body.
And those astral bodies are somewhat like zombies. They retain all, they have information at hand. They still retain information, and then it slowly dissipates. And then there's various astral bodies.
It's like the skeleton
disintegration.
So it's like the skeletal remains of somebody will still hold, or even the remains, all, you know, the muscle tissue, all that will hold DNA or whatever.
Yeah.
Information about the person, the astral remains will hold information about the soul.
Right. So I saw, because the majority, 99% of the people who perished in those camps were Jews and Gypsies and Armenians and
Polish people.
Polish people. There were Catholics. There were different people that were slaughtered, murdered there.
Yeah.
But you see, their souls are not restricted now to that area because they weren't guilty. They didn't commit atrocities. For the most part.
Well, I mean, you have to consider what karma resulted in being. Being there.
There's a mess.
First place.
A interpretation about the karma of that event.
And especially because it was a mass. I mean, all those people, the connections they had karmically. Just like 9/11. I mean, everybody that died there.
Yeah. Yeah. They aren't. You know, they just don't want to. Now, the Nazis, very few died in those camps. And so they're not, that's not where their souls are right now. Their souls are in another area. I wouldn't want to mention it right now, but their souls are in another area. So the camp has sort of, you know, when you listen to the hollow wind, it's a wind, it's a sound, and there's energy in it, but it's hollow. So what I saw was quite frightening, because I saw the residual energies of these the people who had been gassed and murdered there, terrible. Not just gassed and murdered, but hung and all kinds of things, firing squads, beaten to death. It was terrible. And now it was also the third year. And in the third year, when I opened up my third ear, I didn't imagine the cries. I heard them. I didn't imagine them. I heard them. I couldn't much stay in the area very long. But I did. I just kept telling myself, this is past. It happened. So I tried to consider it like a movie, looking at it like a movie, and just blessing the souls that had moved on and the tragedies that had occurred there. But we were getting into the topic of, 9/11.
We were.
I hadn't been to New York since 9/11, only went there once.
I've been there since 9/11.
Oh.
I've never been there before 9/11, actually. But I've been there a couple times since 9/11. But I didn't go to anything. When I was there, I didn't do anything touristy, so I didn't like see the Statue of Liberty, or I didn't go to the Twin Towers or anything like that. So I didn't even, I didn't go there. And I've never been to Germany. I did go to the Anne Frank House in the Netherlands, which you went to.
Yeah.
Which is the Netherlands. Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've been there, right?
Yeah.
But actually, we're getting into 9/11, but we're talking about where we are now with COVID. Obviously, New York's being hit. We're all being hit. And anyway, I just wanted to mention a bill that was passed about contact testing, contact tracing, the TRACE Act. And it's the bill is H.R. 6666.
Four sixes.
But it still holds as three.
Yeah.
And 9/11, I've watched so many documentaries about 9/11, evidence presented about what really flew into those buildings, what happened to those planes really, and all the people aboard. Did planes really fly into the Twin Towers? Would it be possible for a plane, the way it's built, to penetrate through the towers? Unlikely. And the way that the buildings fell were like a detonation. Also, there were adjacent, the World Trade Center as well, was the way it fell was like a detonation. Pentagon.
What impacts me is not the controversy.
No. It impacts me.
I'm more gripped by it actually happened.
Well, it impacts me because I think the place that we're in, with 19 years later, now we have COVID-19, as you pointed out, and everything that's affecting our country right now, all these fires in California, the whole state is on fire. We're experiencing ash and smoke.
Yeah, we've got the worst smog in 26 years.
It's horrible. The whole summer has been terrible air quality.
Wildlife from the land.
Yeah.
1,000-year-old Joshua
Tree. So, we're really in this point of mass destruction, sadly.
Yeah, the world's in terrible shape. We can't just stop there. We've got to develop a new paragraph and get through this and
normalcy and
tranquility
and equilibrium, of course,
and balance on the planet. I have my own personal thoughts about what's happening now, but I've been struggling with these thoughts since the very, very tip of the early 70s.
Right.
So that was 50 years ago.
Right, I know. And in fact, it's all over. For the thousands listening right now, could read Occult to Sleeper. COVID-19, it's all over the book.
Yeah.
And 9/11's in there. That you wrote that before 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote that before 9/11.
And it's in there.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
I saw that.
I mean, Like you pointed out to me, I go, oh my God, I see that in the book. I knew about it.
Do you remember one time we were talking about a short story you wrote? I was telling you about the short story, and then you go, and then what happened? Like, you wrote the short story. You're like, it was funny.
Well, I tend to, you know, when you're writing novels, you write a novel, you spend your whole life on it, and then you go to the next one.
Oh.
And I don't know. Maybe I'm getting older or something, and I don't recall them all. But I remember in the seventh grade. In the seventh grade, which was around 1963, I saw 9/11 happen. And I remember I was in the seventh grade telling everybody that there was going to be a major disaster in New York and buildings were going to fall. And I saw this stuff. But of course, you know, back then, what do you do with a kid that says that? I mean, I was going to doctors and stuff, you know, they thought my visions were some sort of psychological thing I had.
Well, you started telling them about their own personal
lives,
then
I would be
psychic
to them, and then they thought, oh, you just have an active brain or something. They thought I had a tumor or something. But this event, and then when it finally happened, 19 years ago now,
19 years ago, and I didn't really put that together until you said 19 years ago.
What?
The COVID-19,
yeah, COVID-19,
I think that's
19,
definitely,
yeah.
Definitely connected.
And the fact that it's 19 years ago, COVID-19, and we're in 2020. So 2020 has a lot to do with it. Now, the thing about 2020, for our purpose of numerology, is that 2020
has an 11.
Is 11 times 2. Bad news. I never thought 2020 was going to be a good year. Even back in the 70s, I was not thinking it was going to be a good year. There might even be a reference to that I described. But the idea of 11, and we were watching murder shows yesterday.
Yeah, so that's the thing. And actually, it's funny that you mentioned the hand. People's hand gestures, because no disrespect to the deceased person, but he sang, they call them cantors, but I don't think in his religion they would be, I don't think they call them cantor, they try to call them, I don't know what they call, it's like Baptist church or something, remember?
Yeah.
They're singing, and he needed a conducting class, and as well as probably some other training. But anyway, he was very, very active. I mean, really led an exemplary life, listening to the accounts of what his life was like from his friends and family. Not only was he ambitious on a personal level, because he was trying to, Price Waterhouse? He was like an accountant.
Did you mention his name?
No.
Mention his name.
Botham Jean, and everybody probably has heard about this because it made national news.
Yeah, he's a great black man, great, great human being.
Yeah, he was from St. Lucia.
Yeah.
And so he was incredibly ambitious, as I stated, in his personal life, but he was like a humanitarian. He did. Outreach in St. Lucia for less fortunate people. He was very active in his church. He followed Christ. He was a great friend. He led his life with enthusiasm and, you know, always had a smile on his face.
Very talented in business. You know,
very talented in business.
Up and coming.
Involved.
He sounded like a terrific human being.
Really, really.
And then specifically being a black man.
His best friend was white, though. So, I mean, he was not...
filled with white friends.
White and black friends.
No,
he was not prejudiced. He was, exactly.
And his family seemed to be very gracious and loving people.
Intelligent. They were well-spoken.
So they're outstanding human beings. And then this idiot cop who in the investigation, turns out to be a bigot anyways, a female.
Well, not only was she a bigot, but she expressed, she'd wiped her social media accounts, according to this documentary, except for Pinterest. Maybe there were a couple of posts they found on Twitter. And the most outstanding thing to me, more than her being a racist, because that came into question. She had character witnesses, a character witness that she helped through drug rehabilitation. She had arrested, but then attended her graduation from her drug program. And this woman was Black that testified on her behalf.
Yeah.
So there were conflicting accounts, but yes, I do think she did have prejudice.
And I didn't mean to say idiot cop. I didn't mean to say policemen are great people. And yes, they're wonderful. We need them. Law and order.
Yeah, we do need police. I mean,
but
as much as I don't.
Why I say this particular idiot cop was because she had an agenda anyways against Blacks. And then supposedly she went to the wrong apartment above her. It was the apartment directly above her. And she went to that apartment and for some reason opened up the door. They said it was unlocked, but I don't know.
She was able to
put
her key in the door.
Maybe
they had recently replaced the locks. They said it was raining that night and the doors had a habit of not closing fully. So she probably was able to insert her key into the lock and then push the door open.
Yeah, maybe that happened. But then she walks in.
And she was angry. She was angry, they think, because she was supposed to meet her lover. She was having an affair with a married member of her married police partner. And they think that something happened that maybe he canceled their plan. So that perhaps she was angry at the time, wasn't paying attention, parked on the wrong floor, went to the apartment, walked in. And now at that point, hello. Can you know, I would know, I think, if I made the mistake of walking in someone else's home. This was not late at night. I mean, the lights were on in the apartment. So she could see that it wasn't her furniture, you would think. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they didn't have an identical apartment. They lived above each other, these two.
Well, you know,
individuals.
But they lived above each other, but I think just this woman, just the impact of seeing a Black man and what she thought was her apartment coming towards her, because this guy was probably scared to death, didn't know.
Well, he was sitting, though, on the couch. He was sitting on the couch when she walked in, and he got up. Yes. They say the bullet went into his chest from the top and then took a turn downward. So the reason they think the bullet made that trajectory is because he stood up. So also her account is that she told him to show his hands and to stop, and he wouldn't. And his family says this is totally not true, because he was, you know, his sister and him had conversations about if they were confronted by police, they were aware of prejudice and what happens to Black people. Exactly.
Anyway,
and he was he was someone who would follow orders. I mean, he was obvious.
He sounded like a terrific human being. And this particular woman, who happened to have been a police officer, that just response in quick reflex fired and killed him.
And intended to kill him by her own account. She said, yes, my intention was to kill him. I shot to kill him. And then...
No weapons. She could have just said halted. She didn't see any weapons. She just shot him.
So whatever happened in that apartment, I mean, her account of what happened, I think what the family says, we believe what happened until she walked in there. And then after that, it's, you know, it's all lies. But anyway, she didn't render aid because she was texting. It shows there's a text history. There were deleted texts, but she was texting her partner during the time that this guy was bleeding. And then the 911 call was subsequently released. She showed remorse. She was crying, but seemed more concerned with herself really than the guy, because she wasn't helping him.
And got 10 years.
Well, she was convicted of murder, but yeah, 10 years.
10 lousy years for that. Why do we bring it up? Because we went and investigated their birth dates.
So he was born on 9/29/1991. So he's a 40. What am I doing? He was a 40 equals four. Interesting, because he was 26 when he died. On the verge of 27. So she was born on 8/9/1988. She was a 42-6. Obviously, their karmic numbers are interchangeable. They're a 10 together, which is his 9-1. But they both share nines in common. But the interesting thing is, too, he was buried on 9/24, which is the day of her inverted karmic number.
Yeah.
But he has 11s everywhere.
He has 11s. Then we were watching another show, and this guy, this psychotic guy, whatever, it's nuts.
Psychotic guy.
They said he was had mental problems.
Oh, you mean the one in
killed
one for?
He went in. I don't know. He went into an apartment or something.
No,
or
he didn't go into an apartment. He didn't go into an apartment. The one we were watching previous.
Yeah, with the 29s.
Well, so, no, that was, we were unable to get the guy's birth date. He went on a rampage, he killed somebody and then injured two others. And I don't know the order of, I think the last person, I think it was like injure, kill, injure, something like that. So the person in the middle was killed. You know, in terms of the time scheme, but I found the birth dates of the woman that was killed and the woman that escaped, and I didn't find the other person that was injured's name, but the woman that was killed was born on 12/21, so obviously there's the 11 there separated by the two, but the 22 in there is an 11 factor. And then the woman that was injured and escaped, it was in her vestibule that she was stabbed.
Oh.
And she ended up kicking the knife away, and he got stabbed. Yeah. And he ended up at the same emergency room as she was being treated in Boston at Tufts. And they arrested him there. Of course, they didn't have evidence yet that he had killed. I mean, they suspected that he was the one who had killed this other woman. But they were... you know, not able to charge him immediately. But anyway, that woman that was killed was born on 1/12.
Yeah.
So.
And in the show, it depicted that she forgave him.
It did?
She forgave him. Remember, she forgave him, yeah. She wrote him a letter.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And forgave him. And, you know, so the act of forgiveness with him.
Well, that happened in the city. You fell asleep, but that happened in the second crime show with the Botham Jean guy. His brother, no one else gave a victim. The whole family was invited to give the victim impact statements. The only one that did is the brother, and he essentially forgave the police officer and said, you know, I love you. I want you to accept Christ, and ended up hugging her. And anyway, I mean, I thought it was, and people were saying, you know, then social media exploded because of he said, you know, I don't even think you deserve, I don't want you to go to jail. I just want you to live your best life and accept Christ. And people were saying, is this guy crazy? But, you know, honestly, to be able to be so forgiving has to be freeing when you have all that anger, because he had tremendous anger. He had tremendous anger for a long time, the younger brother. So...
yeah, and I think, you know, having said all this and bringing up 9/11, I think we have to kind of, all of us on the planet, need to respect those who were killed during that event and just remember that and pray that something like that never happens again. And,
in the direction of this.
And I think it's a very human quality to observe not just holidays that are full of joy, but again, we have to consider the events of the world that were tragic. And
well, that's why we have like
to observe
Veterans
it, not
Day.
Bury it. I'm not one for burying the past to the point.
No, you're not
ignorance.
One for you're not one for holidays.
Yeah, it don't mean that much to me. But the idea that we, you know, I'm a great advocate of not burning books or what do you call it? Silencing language to the extent that you're not allowed to say certain things now.
Well,
because
now
it's too sensitive, motivated, but there's a cost to that because
censorship, it's called.
Yeah, there's a cost to that because if we're going to eliminate great works of art or literature because of a word that's in there that was part of the language, I mean, where do we stop? Where do we stop?
Well, the problem.
Even if the word offends me personally, I wouldn't have it be censored.
It's interesting. We've come full circle because in this conversation, because we're talking about fillers at the beginning of the show. And I'm so congested because of the smoke. It's horrible. But anyway, I'm listening to myself speak going, ugh. At USC, a professor was fired. He was, what did he teach?
Yeah.
International studies or something?
For the Chinese.
Right. So he, it was the Chinese man, and not Chinese, Mandarin, because there's so many dialects.
Yeah.
Mandarin word for which is, did I say it? I mean, I probably should,
well,
because it's like, it sounds
like
the N word. It sounds like the N word. And so what happened is some members of his class were offended and complained to administration, and the professor was placed on administrative leave. This was last week, and I haven't looked at it updates. So he hasn't been completely terminated from the job, but apparently he was a highly, highly esteemed professor, award-winning professor at USC. And what this man is doing is preparing these students for a career in international business where they're going to encounter these words in, you know, obviously if they're traveling to China and people use this kind of language, what better way to be prepared for a word that sounds like an offensive English word to prepare them before they get over there? I mean, that's his job as a teacher.
Yeah.
So I don't understand, and you know how offensive it is to people that speak that language to say, well, your language sounds like, you know, these words sound like an offensive English word, so you're not allowed to use them anymore. Apparently, the Russian word for book is a similar sounding word. I mean, so should we eliminate the Russian word for book?
Yeah, country.
Huh?
An African, there's a country. Well, Niger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Niger.
But,
which is where the word originated from, obviously.
Yeah.
That's offensive. But were we supposed to rename the country? I mean,
crazy. On this topic, I saw a slide rule basis. When I was young, I was at the university, as a student, the teacher, I walked into a communication speech class. And on the board was the word fuck. And we all sat down and were just in disbelief that that word was on the blackboard. Blackboard.
Yeah.
Not even a black. Well,
I mean, you can't even say the color black anymore.
Yeah,
well, black is actually, anyway,
on a very dark.
No, I mean, it's
board.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
But
anyway.
Many African Americans like to be referred to as black.
Just as
white people are referred to as whites, which apparently isn't capitalized, but black is capitalized now, but whatever. Okay.
So he wrote fuck on the blackboard.
Fuck.
And we were, you know, back then, my God, this was a felony to do that. And
not literally, but it was offensive.
You just didn't do it.
Not.
So,
acceptable.
He let us all sit down and settle down and look. He was watching our reaction, letting us talk. And suddenly he said, fornication under consent of the king.
It's an acronym.
Yeah. Fornication under consent of the king. He goes, now what's wrong with writing, as you said, the abbreviation of the word on the board. That's what he meant. He goes, what did you think it meant? Well, it's been corrupted to the word fuck, meaning fornication, but it's just the word. But it stood, and this was in England, it stood that the period of history, you couldn't fuck, you couldn't have fornication
under
without
the, consent
which of
the
king.
King.
Can you imagine? That's what our country. But the idea that using it in such a way that we now have to censor language because of what it implies.
Well, think of the word. I mean, but it's funny because think you just said the word country. We probably shouldn't say that anymore because it has, I mean,
yeah.
Think of how it sounds.
The euphemism.
You know what I'm
word.
Saying?
Yeah.
I just did it again. Okay, yeah. We actually have
okay.
Jennifer who wants to speak with us. Hi.
Hello. I'm very fascinated by what you're speaking about.
Oh, good.
Thank
4370.
You.
Yeah, but I'm calling about my son. He just had a birthday.
Oh, okay.
090. Oh, no, you don't like it when I say 0. 99.
2005. Yeah, Jennifer, you're putting those zeros in. I was shocked.
You stop my vowels. Cancel.
1825, 7.
What's Jennifer's again?
She's 4370.
4370, and what's
yeah.
This other birth date?
9/9/2005.
What, 9 what?
9/9/2005.
And this is her grandson?
No, her son.
Oh, jeez.
No. No, he's full of compliments. Whatever you want in Hugo Boost, give us a call. Jeez.
Wait, are you suggesting that your son is from
So what's your question specifically? Any?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, with him, in terms of career path, like, the intelligence level is really high, but he also really likes to work with his hands. Is there any sort of, through his numbers, can you get any sort of indication of what would be a better path?
Well, wow. He's 15 years old, and you're saying he's high intellectual capacity,
mm-hmm.
but also, are you talking about working with your hands? His hands in like
carpentry, trades, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's okay. And you're wondering how to guide him. I mean, you're wondering how to guide him. I mean, he has a strong fifth vocal energy. And two, does he write at all? Is there any writing interest or talent?
He's a very good drawer.
Oh, well, that's the.
Oh,
hold on a sec, Jennifer.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
So that's in the fifth chakra element, the artistic ability. But anyway, go ahead.
No, I was going to let you guys talk.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, artistic. Well, the thing, you see, you said guide him, Jennifer. Your numbers together become 13. Okay. So is that significant in and of itself? No. But your months added together become 13. Now that gets into a different element of energy because your...
Well, it becomes your month, though, too.
Yeah.
Four.
Your sense of trying to guide him and teach him is just beyond the motherly instinct. There is a certain karmic element going on there.
And their days become her day. Three.
Yeah. And the other thing that's important is your son is born on a very powerful karmic element, 99, which is 18, which is an 18 and 9 again. So he's got a very strong resilient energy. And as Kristen was saying, the 5 has a strong value energy in the artistic element, because it's communication, art, speech, language, things like this.
The other thing is too, if he's designing, does he design stuff like in working with his hands, carpentry?
Yeah.
Or no?
Yeah. He creates, like, fixes things and then creates, you know, objects, like engineering kind of stuff.
Okay, so here's where it gets intriguing. He's a 25 equals 7, which is reflective of his year 2005. Now, 7 is a spiritual number. So he, and with a 9 coupled with a 9, he is here to do something with his hands, and perhaps in architecture, engineering.
He needs to build a church.
There's going to be something that he
yeah, because people go to them now, right?
Yeah. There's going to be something that he designs or is involved in that is going to have a spiritual root to it. There's something that's going to be happening there.
So, like building a church, or could, I mean, it may not be, but he could.
Or some spiritual place.
Spiritual center.
Or it could be that he builds something, or he engineers towards something that is of high purpose for humanity. You know, he's going to be doing something important.
The thing about his intellectual capacity, the engineering part of it, and mixing that with the construction, sounds like he's already doing that. But, you know, he's not just, instead of going to a construction job and just pounding nails, encouraging him to develop his engineering ability in conjunction with what he does with his hands could be
right. But you got to remember something, Jennifer. His master
mm-hmm.
is the collection of your month and day, and it's in your year 7. So
mm-hmm.
there's something that you're supposed to maybe subtly convey to him about spirituality. And since you call these shows and you're obviously in tune with spiritual language, there's something that you might play a part in that influences him even beyond your existence on the planet. I mean, there's a, 35-year difference between the two of you. Almost 34, which is your first two
numbers.
And 35 is 7 times 5.
35?
35 is 7 times 5.
Oh, 35, the age she was.
The difference between the two.
Right, when she was 35 when she had him.
35. So you got to think about that. I mean, I'm not sure if we're addressing your specific question, because I don't know if I grasp what your specific question was.
So she's asking how to guide. Well, you're asking if you should guide him towards working with his hands versus intellectual.
Well, and you sort of hit the nail on the head with the architecture, because I'm thinking that sort of combines everything, because they are generally hands-on, and there is that drawing aspect, even though you're not building, but you can get involved in the building, and then you've got the creativity of it without the, you know, having to, even though it's math's good, it doesn't have to, you know, look at it from clearly, you know, like a scientific way. But he does think that spirituality, like my spirituality, is a crock of shit. He does not believe in it whatsoever. He's
so
the only one of the kids that's so opposed to
it. What is his interest? That's really kind of interesting that there's a division there. What is his spiritual?
He doesn't really have a spiritual bent. Like he believes that, you know, people should be truthful. He believes that people shouldn't be mean. Like he's kind-hearted. He just thinks that, you know, anything beyond the here and what we see with our eyes is BS.
So he's physical, into the physical realm. He thinks that you die and you just turn to dust, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
whereas the other two are like, yeah, they're not afraid of death. They think, you know, paradise is on the other side.
Yeah, this will be converted to humanity. Humanitarianism.
Humanitarian.
So, So I think he'll do something in that regard. It's a broad topic. So he doesn't have to build a church. There's something in the humanity attitude that he will contribute. He could even become a teacher.
But he could also change. His spirituality could change and develop. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's 16 years old.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure if I asked him to build me a church, he'd build me a church. So I'm interested in it, but and he's interested in me, so maybe he'll do it.
I don't know.
There's a lot for you to think about because you can guide him. And if he doesn't adhere to your philosophy or your beliefs, that's fine. Gear him towards the attitude of what can you do to impress humanity, to advance intelligence. You know, and apply
that,
it in this way.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way of looking at it, yeah.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Hopefully that helps, Jennifer.
It does. It helped a lot. Thank you.
Okay. Well, have a good weekend.
You too.
Okay,
bye.
Take care. We're at the end of the road here, 42 seconds left. And we're back on the air Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Someone came in just now at the end, but dropped. I was actually going to go 5 minutes beyond, but they lost out. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.